Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, the MMA Corner Radio is back in town. And as always, it's always good to be back here at your home for all things MMA. Dale D'Souza, the host of the MMA Corner Radio, back on your MMA airways. Pardon me. And ladies and gentlemen, what a weekend we had in the world of MMA. Only one event, and if you missed it, it was on UFC Fight Pass. Talking, of course, about UFC Fight Night 64, Gonzaga vs. Prokop 2, live from the Torrent Arena in Krakow, Poland, headlined by the rematch between Pride Fighting Championships legend Mirko Krokop-Filipovic and Gabriel Napal Gonzaga, co-headlined, of course, by Jimmy Manoa vs. John Blachowicz. Now, we were regretfully off the air last weekend. However, we are so glad to be back on the air this week because, to be honest, this was a card that I think flew under the radar for a lot of people. As a matter of fact, you had to be following the MMA Corner, your home for all things MMA, to know that there was a card on this weekend. You know, the Fight Pass cards, they kind of fly under the radar unless you pretty much live on social media, in which case it didn't really fly under the radar. But there were a lot of questions coming into this bout between Krokop and Gonzaga. First of all, was it going to be the same fight? Was it going to end the same? Was this a different Mirko Krokop? Was this a different Gabriel Gonzaga? Was it good that this was a Gabriel Gonzaga that was different from the one that knocked out Krokop? And, you know, you also have the questions of why is this fight happening? Why did Krokop resign? But as the fight went on, and you know, as it got from the first round to the third round, it slowly but surely began to make sense as far as why this fight was happening. This clearly was not the same Mirko Krokop that we saw back at UFC 70 when Gonzaga knocked him out with probably one of the most famous head kicks in the history of the sport. Now, did Krokop take his share of damage early on? Absolutely. Let's not act like this was, you know, just a blitz from the onset. Gonzaga did pressure Filipovic. He did pressure him by putting him against the cage specifically. And he looked to try and make this his fight. But as the fight wore on, Krokop just proved that he was a different fighter, that he was a much hungrier fighter, and that, you know what, he does have a ground game. You don't necessarily need to be in his guard to be in trouble. He can put you in danger on the ground. And this is something that probably nobody thought they would say if they knew this fight was happening, because the ground is the one place you do not go to if you're fighting Gabriel Gonzaga. If you sign on to fight Gabriel Gonzaga, you know he has submissions, you know he has knockout power, you know he has some pretty diverse striking as far as forward fighting is concerned, and by forward fighting I basically mean, you know, being the aggressor. But the ground is the one place you do not go to with Gabriel Gonzaga. I mean, he's not a Superman. You can get him on the feet. You have to be a really, really good wrestler to get him to the ground. But if you're a Mirko Krokop, you don't take him to the ground. That was everyone's belief. Where did Mirko Krokop get that TKO from with like 3 minutes and 30 seconds expired in the third round? He went to the ground with Krokop. As a matter of fact, he actually dropped Krokop. I don't believe if I remember correctly, he didn't take down Krokop. He dropped him, and he basically stayed on top of him while Gonzaga was against the cage. And I know exactly what this meant. Mirko Krokop defeating Gabriel Gonzaga, in a nutshell, means Mirko Krokop beat Gabriel Gonzaga. And there's no hidden meaning behind that. There's no deeper picture that we need to be seeing. This is Miracle Krokop's first fight back. Gonzaga is at a much, he's at a much different place in his career right now than he was when he was fighting Krokop. We got to remember, the first time they fought, a shot at Randy Couture was on the line. Nobody was giving Gonzaga a shot. As a matter of fact, I can go on the record and say right now, I didn't even. Gonzaga was going to knock out Krokop. I thought that, you know, it was going to be a pretty easy knockout from Krokop, that, you know, Couture and Krokop was happening. But obviously that didn't happen. Gonzaga, Couture ended up happening. Gonzaga ended up losing to Couture. And we know how we basically got from there to here. But getting back to the point here, Krokop is back in the sense of he's back in MMA. He's back in the win column in MMA. But now let's see what he can do now that he's officially back into the UFC and back in the sport of MMA. That was a good performance. Don't let me take anything away from Mirko Krokop. He is a legend of the sport. He deserves all the props in the world for what he did at Gonzaga. However, the talent pool in the UFC heavyweight division, while not particularly noteworthy outside of the champ, Cain Velasquez, and top challengers like Fabricio Werdum and Junior Dos Santos, which, by the way, I only say because those are really the only two guys that anyone thinks of when they think of guys that could actually challenge Cain. And even at that point, there's not a whole lot of guys that can challenge Cain at this level of competition because Cain Velasquez is at a whole different level. But, you know, to put a bottom line on it, the UFC heavyweight division, while not particularly spectacular and notably thin, it's still a lot different than it was back when Krokop was fighting Gonzaga. You know, the guys have come and gone. You know, there have been guys that, you know, looked like they had promise, looked like they could have been great, ended up not being so great. Guys that probably weren't expected to last past the unaired prelims, ended up going from that to the upper echelon of the division. And, you know, when you look at the heavyweight division right now, it may not look particularly, stacked, but it's still a division that Krokop would have trouble with, especially with guys like Andre Arlovski resigning, guys like Stipe Miocic Stipe gave Junior Dos Santos a run for his money. I don't think anyone expected Junior to be given a run for his money against Stipe. Stipe made it a fight. So that tells me that Stipe can and will challenge anybody on any given night, even if you were a legend of Pride Fighting Championship. Not saying Mirko should get Stipe next. As a matter of fact, I think they trained together at one point, and I'm not exactly sure if either would take the fight, but I do think Krokop just needs a few more wins before, you know, we can officially say that he is back. He is back to his old form, or maybe he's on his way to a form that's better than his old form. I don't know. But I think I just want to see him win a few more fights before I start getting ahead of myself and thinking that maybe he actually can challenge for a UFC heavyweight title. Right now, he's just got to focus on keeping his winning streak alive. Speaking of winning streaks, Jimmy Manuel had a little bit of trouble last year when he fought Alexander Gustin. He was defeated, I would say, somewhat soundly. I don't remember it really being that one-sided of a fight. But Manoa back in the win column after defeating John Blachowicz. Here's basically what happened. Jimmy Manoa fought John Blachowicz and beat John Blachowicz for about two. I gave him all three rounds. I like Blachowicz. I thought he was a tremendous prospect. I thought he was a guy that, you know, the UFC really needed to get on top of signing him, and I was really excited to see what he could do against Jimmy Manoa. But the fight wasn't particularly exciting, and, you know, that was just a Jimmy Manoa fight any way you look at it. Even if you gave John Blachowicz one round, it was still pretty much a Jimmy Manoa fight. You really can't make a case for Blachowicz winning that fight, unfortunately. You know, just beyond that, you know, what more can you say? Jimmy Manuel back in the win column, and that's all there is to it. Paul Pelech, in the win column after defeating Sheldon Westcott. Now, this was a fight that, you know, had we done the show last week, I would have gone on record and said that Sheldon Westcott probably would have submitted or taken a decision, an easy decision for Pelech. I mean, I really thought that, you know, this was a whole different ball game, that, you know, Pelech might have just bitten off a slight bit more than he could chew, even though Westcott, you know, he's not really a top-tier guy yet. Westcott is still a bit of a step up in competition, and I thought he was really going to, make it a rough night for Pelech. And Pelech, man, I know he only won two of those three rounds, but damn, man, that was a hell of a performance. And Pelech was just on fire. Speaking of people that were on fire, okay, so there are two, maybe three. No. There's actually four names that I want to bring up before we get to this weekend's UFC Fox 15 card. First of all, Marina Meraz against Joanne Calderwood. Never mind, you know, where was Joanne's head at? You know, what happened to Joanne? Blah, 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 blah. I mean, come on, guys. Joanne Calderwood is still a beast. Joanne Calderwood lost once. Come on now. She loses one fight, and already everyone's asking questions about, you know, where is she at in her career? You know, will she bounce back from this defeat? Blah, 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 blah. Let me educate you people on Joanne Calderwood. She was one of the hottest prospects in the sport before she fought Meraz. She was 9-0. She was a beast. She was known probably more for her technical striking than anything else. And, yeah, she was pretty damn good at it. And as a matter of fact, she was so good at it that she won 44% of her fights by some form of knockout. If that's not skill, you tell me what the hell skill is in 2015. And the fact that she lost to Marina Meraz, yeah, I get major upset. You know, Meraz was on fire. You know, she did everything she wanted to do in order to get that submission, and that was a darn good armbar submission, any way you look at it. But, you know, asking questions about Calderwood, come on, son. That was one loss. One loss does not mean your career is over, especially if you were undefeated coming into that fight. So, yeah, I do think that there's a reason to keep an eye on Meraz, especially since she was calling for a title shot at Joanna Jędrzejczyk after the fight. But come on now, let's not write off Calderwood completely, on the heels of this loss. She will be back. She will come back stronger than ever. And who knows? Maybe a rematch happens down the line. Maybe it does. I don't think it should be Meraz's next fight by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's definitely time to get her more steps up in competition, much like Calderwood was. But let's not sleep on Calderwood. So she lost one time. That was her first loss, and it's not going to kill her career. It just says, you know, back to the drawing board, maybe work a little bit more on submission defense, something like that. Because, you know, there's no way a girl like Meraz really should be able to take a girl down like Calderwood that easy. But then again, these things happen in MMA. You can't ask Meraz to just lay down for Calderwood. You got to give her credit down the line. I mean, let's just keep it real, man. Meraz put up a good fight. Nothing happened with Calderwood other than she lost to Meraz. That's it. Next up, next guy, I can't wrap up the show without talking about three other names, one of which, Leon Edwards. What a performance by this guy. And when I say that, I mean, all right, this is going to probably sound like Andy Ogle versus Amir, versus Makwan Amirkani, but this fight only lasted 8 seconds, and Edwards put Bashinsky out in 8 seconds, which is not easy to do. It's not even, never mind 8 seconds, it's not easy to put away Seth Bashinsky in 8 minutes, all right? This guy is a tough cook. Let's put that on the record right now.
And Leon Edwards just put him out
in 8 seconds like it was nothing. you know, really, really got off to the start that he wanted to, and you know, he was able to blitz Pashinsky. And I got to shout out Leon Edwards because that was a pretty darn impressive performance. I think that there is a long way that this guy can go in the sport. All I want to do is just see him in more fights. And that's the theme with pretty much everyone on this card. They all won. They all look good doing it. I just want to see him in more fights. Case in point, Alexandra Albu. Now, this is a girl that, you know, you probably saw more of her pictures than her actual fights. There were a lot of questions about this girl. Could she perform well? Could she, you know, could she last under the UFC banner? Very, very few people really knew that much about Isabella Baderic to begin with, but I got to say, Albu, I think there is something there. She was able to put away Baderic in like 3 minutes and 30 seconds, maybe a little bit more than that, of the second round, mind you, but it was still a darn good performance by Albu. And you know, once again, you got to give this girl more fights. You got to put this girl, you know, if you want to make her an international sensation, by all means, do that. But this girl's got to, I mean, this is a girl you got to consider putting worldwide. I mean, this is a girl that can go a long way in the sport, not just as a fighter, but as a personality. I mean, I think there's a lot to this girl that the UFC can capitalize on, just as long as she keeps on winning. That's all we're asking for. Just as long as she keeps on winning, we can put her as far as we're wanting to put out a girl like, oh, Yedierchik or, you know, someone of that caliber. I mean, why not? You know, there's something to Albu. Another fighter, I should say, that I think there is definitely something to. Former Cage Warriors champion Steven Ray. Now, Steven Ray was not supposed to be on this card. I believe he was a last-minute replacement for somebody. I'm drawing blanks on exactly who that was, but he came, he saw he needed two rounds, but he defeated, and handily defeated, I might add, Marcin Wendel. I mean, it was just... I want to see Steven Ray back in the UFC cage sooner than later. I think he looked absolutely incredible against Marcin Wendel. And that's despite the fact that, you know, the fight went on, you know, to the second round. But come on, man. That fight probably should have been stopped sometime in the first. I mean, there was a moment when I thought that fight was legitimately going to be stopped. And I thought it probably should have been. I just didn't think, you know, I didn't think a minute and 35 seconds was going to be enough time for Wendel to get back on the winning track. All due respect to Wendel, I mean, he came to scrap, but, you know, it just didn't happen. You know, Ray was just on another level on Saturday. Speaking on, you know, the other level subject, we are going to see a myriad of athletes that are going to try and prove that they are on another level when the UFC comes to Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey this weekend for UFC on Fox 15, Machida versus Rockhold. We remind you, the main card starts on Fox at an 8 p.m. Eastern start with preliminaries also on Fox starting at a 6 p.m. Eastern start. Now, we remind you, there is a portion of the preliminary card that will take place on UFC Fight Pass at 4:45. If I'm not mistaken, that would be 3:45 for all you Central Timers. I may be mistaken on that, but, you know, if I am, someone please tell me. I do apologize. Tweet me at Dale D'Souza MMA on Twitter. We just want to make sure that we got this all down correctly, ladies and gentlemen. We are not a fountain of misinformation. but we are your home for all things MMA, as we've said time and time again. And part of the reason why we are your home for all things MMA is because we strive to bring you everything you need to know about this UFC on Fox 15 card. I mean, we don't pull any punches when it comes to this card. This is probably one of the more solid UFC and Fox outings that, well, personally, I don't speak for the entire outlet, but this is one of the more impressive UFC and Fox cards that I've seen in quite some time. I mean, you have impressive bouts from top to bottom. You have a lot of solid prospects on this card. You got Corey Anderson on this card. You got Aljamain Sterling, undefeated Aljamain Sterling. You got Diego Brandão versus Jimmy Hettis. Tim the Dirty Bird Means on the preliminary portion of the Fight Pass card. You got Eddie Gordon facing Chris Dempsey on this card. You got Paige VanZant versus Felice Little Bulldog Herrig. Max Holloway versus Cub Swanson. Chris Camozzi back in action inside the UFC octagon against Ronaldo Jacare Souza, and Lyoto Machida versus Luke Rockhold. Now let's talk a little bit about these fights, especially the ones on the main card. Now, Felice Herrig versus Paige VanZant. Here's the way I see it. I mean, Paige VanZant, very impressive girl. Her only loss that I can think of, if she lost another one, again, please tell me, but Paige VanZant's only loss that I can think of was Tisha Torres, and she's a lot different from the fighter that we saw against Tisha Torres. I mean, you know, she's really improved in a lot of different areas. I could easily say the same thing for Felice Herrig. I know people like to rib on Felice Herrig because of the way that she kind of puts herself out there, but the fact is, if you're not putting yourself out there, then, you know, you gotta do something out there on the national or global level. Put on a global, that's awesome. If you can do it on the national level, though, you know, you're doing something right. And Felice Herrig has done that beyond what she can do in the cage, you know? I mean, you can Google Felice Herrig and, you know, you'll probably see more than just her record and, you know, some interviews that she did leading up to the fight with VanZant. But, you know, as far as what she can do in the cage, she is pretty beastly. I mean, there aren't a whole lot of things that Felice Herrig cannot do in the cage. I mean, she's a very, very solid competitor. She trains under Jeff Kern. She represents Team Kern proudly, as she has for her past few fights. And, you know, there really isn't a beef between Paige and Felice, but, you know, there's just a natural competition within both girls. I mean, both girls want to prove that they are the apex of the division. Both girls want to fight their way to Joanna Jędrzejczyk. And I think both girls are going to do that come Saturday night. I will go on the record and say this. If this bout is more ground game than stand-up, I will more than likely be shocked. I will probably go so far as to knock. Okay, so put it in perspective. So you take a major upset like Anthony Pettis losing to Rafael Dos Anjos at UFC 185. You take that, you put that as the front runner for upset of the year. And I would probably say that, you know, I would probably put that right up there with Dos Anjos beating VanZant, and Herrig spent most of this fight on the ground. I mean, I am not expecting this fight to take any sort of trip to the ground. I think it's going to be a largely stand-up fight, and I think that's what makes this a very competitive fight, because, you know, both girls are good on the feet. Both girls, you know, they can take your legs out on the feet. They can rattle you. They can rattle you. They can hit you pretty much anywhere. And I think that's what makes this an exciting fight. I could also say the same thing for Max Holloway versus Cub Swanson, but there is one major thing that I think people are leaving out, which I don't understand why they're leaving it out, and that's the fact that Max Holloway versus Cub Swanson isn't necessarily about that could be all stand-up. We got to remember, Cub Swanson, yes, he has gone to decision before. Yes, he does have a lot of his wins. In fact, he still has the majority of his wins via knockout. However, Cub Swanson knows what a ground game is, ladies and gentlemen. That you could probably put as front runner to upset of the year. The fact that Cub Swanson knows what a ground game is, because, oh my God, Cub Swanson, oh, but he's a knockout guy. He likes to do a lot of knockouts. Yes, he likes to knock a lot of guys out, but he knows that you can't be one-dimensional in this sport. You have to prepare that someone leaves an opening for you to submit them. And that's what Cub Swanson has done in a lot of his fights. Yes, he's coming off of a loss to Frankie Edgar, which was a fifth-round submission win, or submission loss, if I'm not mistaken. But that doesn't mean Cub Swanson doesn't know what a ground game is. He's felt the better end of a ground game by submitting guys. He's felt the worst end of a ground game by losing to guys like Frankie Edgar and Ricardo Lamas. You know, I know that was probably the first time I really took note of Ricardo Lamas, is the fact that, you know, he was able to submit a guy like Cub Swanson, who seemed on his way to a title shot at Joe Theata. Max Holloway, of course, no joke, vicious stand-up, pretty diverse striking. You know, he does have a little bit of, you know, what people like to call that volume striking, where, you know, maybe his striking doesn't seem like it has a lot of power, but, you know, as he does more of it, and, you know, as fights wear on, you know, that striking game of Holloway does tear you apart. So I do think it's going to be a pretty fun time seeing exactly whether or not Holloway can do that against Swanson. But again, let's not rule out Swanson's ground game. He does have a ground game. He can't submit guys. And if we're just being honest here, how did Max Holloway lose his first UFC fight? You guessed it. By submission. He got submitted by Dustin Poirier. And you know, let's not make a big deal out of it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with getting submitted by Dustin Poirier. As a matter of fact, it's the only submission loss on Holloway's, you know, career record. In fact, I believe the best way Swanson would probably be able to beat Holloway would probably be by a decision. That would be all well and good, except Swanson doesn't like doing decisions. No one in the sport does. Matter of fact, even the guys that, you know, that they have no problem going to a decision, that a fight's a fight, anything can happen. I mean, even those guys, you know, they don't particularly like decisions because, you know the deal with judges. You think a fight goes one way and then a fight ends up going the other way when it seemed pretty clear that fighter A was beating fighter B, but, you know, that's a different topic. Anyways, Chris Camozzi versus Ronaldo Jacare Souza. This was not supposed to be the co-main event, of course. Yoel Romero, about seven, 8 days ago, something like that. Actually, a few weeks ago, it was Ronaldo Jacare Souza versus Yoel Romero. Yoel Romero got injured. Chris Camozzi was the only guy. Now, this is why Chris Camozzi is rematching Jacare Souza. It has nothing to do with, you know, wins outside of the UFC or, you know, campaigns to get back in the UFC, blah, 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 blah. Chris Camozzi is back in the UFC because he actually had the courage to step up, you know, to actually step up and take the fight with Jacare Souza when no one else was stepping up to take on Jacare Souza. I mean, Camozzi,
he came off of a 4-fight losing streak to beat up, not to beat up Jeremy Kimball, but to submit Jeremy Kimball in prize fighting championships. That was, I believe, in November. Nobody else was calling for Jacare Souza, and then Chris Camozzi just happened to step up. Dana White even tweeted about it on Twitter. Yeah, he was. You know how many guys step up to take up Jacare Souza on 6 days' notice? One. So, you know, regardless of whether you think that this is going to be the same fight, you got to give Chris Camozzi pop for doing what nobody else was willing to do, and that's stepping up to face Jacare Souza. Lyoto Machida versus Luke Rockhold. This is a very interesting fight for a number of reasons. First of all, Lyoto Machida does have a pretty solid
wrestling game. You know, it's not your typical collegiate wrestler's wrestling game. I believe it's more sumo than anything else. But he does have that sumo background. He does have that side advantage because at one time, Lyoto Machida was fighting a heavyweight. And then, you know, there's his well-known run at light heavyweight when he was UFC light heavyweight champion. Arguably lost the first defense to Mauricio Shogun Hua. You know, there's obviously a debate about that. However, you know, the light heavyweight run is in the past. Lyoto Machida is here right now. He's in the present. He's at middleweight. He's fighting a former Strikeforce middleweight champion in Luke Rockhold, the guy that actually dethroned Jacare Souza for the middleweight gold. And it's going to be pretty interesting if this one goes to the ground, which I do think it will, because Machida does have a bit of a size advantage. But he's never had to impose his size advantage on a guy that is very crafty on the ground like Luke Rockhold. You know, I still think back to his submission win over Tim Bosch last year, UFC 172, I believe, the John Jones Cliff Teixeira card. I still think back to that card because I've seen triangle chokes, I've seen triangle arm bars. I seem to recall Rockhold pulling off what some would call a triangle Kimura. I mean, and that's something that you don't see. That doesn't happen unless Luke Rockhold did it to Tim Bosch, and he did it to Tim Bosch. So I was actually very impressed with what he did there. You know, I'm getting extremely forward to seeing what he can do against Machida. I don't think it's an easy fight for Machida by any means, but in the same breath, I don't think it's an easy fight for Rockhold by any means. I think both guys are going to test each other. I think it's going to be a pretty competitive bout before it inevitably ends. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a little bit of time left in the show, so we're just going to bing, bang, boom, run through these predictions for the UFC on Fox 15 card, starting with Herring versus Van Zandt. Like I said, I would be shocked if this one hits the ground. I will probably call it the front runner to upset of the year if this one hits the ground. I am not expecting this one to hit the ground in the slightest little bit, even knowing that Felice Herrig is BFFs with former UFC strawweight champion Cookie Monster Carla Esparza. I know Felice Herrig has been training with her diligently. I know they're the best of friends. I know Felice probably does have wrestling in her back pocket if she needs it, but I'm still expecting this to be a largely stand-up affair. I do think this one is probably, and I'm just saying probably here, but I do think this one probably goes the distance. And if it does, I do see Felice Herrig coming out with the win. Nothing against Paige Van Zandt, but, you know, there is a reason why Felice Herrig is seen as a threat in any fight that girls take against her. It's because she does have a lot of experience. It's because, you know, she is down to go three rounds if she has to. And because, you know, it's always going to be a fight every time you're in there with Felice Herrig. Don't let the looks fool you. But at the same time, you know, don't let Paige Van Zandt you fool you either. I mean, this girl is a hungry fighter. She will look to enforce her will against Felice Herrig. And again, I do think this is going to be a competitive bout on the feet. Keyword being on the feet. I don't see this going to the ground. But again, I do see this going the way of Felice Herrig. I will say Felice Herrig, unanimous decision. Little Bulldog goes 2-0 in the UFC. Max Holloway versus Cub Swanson, very interesting fight for the reasons aforementioned. Both guys can stand with you. Max Holloway does have a submission win on his record. Cub Swanson has won, I believe, 7 of his wins by submission. He has won 8 by some form of knockout. I don't see this one going all 3 rounds. I do see this one ending in about, the second round. I do think Cub Swanson is able to get Holloway to the ground somehow. More than likely, if this one's going to the ground, it's because Cub Swanson drops Holloway. But I do see Holloway getting dropped after a pretty game performance in the first round. I think it's going to be an interesting first round, but I think Swanson drops Holloway in the second and works to secure Holloway's back, and then secures a nice rear naked choke for a second round submission win.
Kamosi versus Jacare Souza. The first fight ended with a technical submission for Jacare. Kamosi, you know, he gave it everything he had the first time, but, you know, he just wasn't able to stave off that deadly submission game of Jacare Souza. Can he survive it the second time out? I will go ahead and say yes. Chris Kamosi will go all three rounds with Jacare Souza in this rematch. In fact, I'll go a step further. I will not be shocked if Chris Kamosi wins this fight. Now, that being said, do I think Chris Kamosi is winning this fight? No. I do think Jacare Souza is going to expect a much more game Chris Kamosi. I think he's going to probably end up grinding out a unanimous decision here. But I do see Jacare Souza beating Chris Kamosi again, despite Kamosi's best efforts. And you know what? I'll take it even a step further, beyond saying that Kamosi's going to survive Jacare, that he's not getting submitted, blah, 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 blah. I'm calling Jacare by a unanimous decision. I'm saying Kamosi can win against Jacare, and I'm saying do not be surprised if Kamosi beats Jacare. I'll go probably one final step further and say Chris Kamosi has probably improved well enough to where he might make this a split decision, regardless of whether he beats Jacare or not. I would not be shocked if that actually happened. And you know what? Never mind the unanimous decision. Put me down for a split decision for Jacare Souza. Because I think Kamosi, even though he's only had one fight since getting released from the UFC, I think he has improved that much. I think he will give Jacare that tough fight. But I still say Jacare Souza takes the split decision. Lyoto Machida versus Luke Rockhold. Now, a lot of people that know me, they know, you know, I'm a big Lyoto Machida guy. You know, I never go against Machida in a fight. It is very, very rare that I see anybody not named Chris Weidman beating Machida. But let me put this on the record right now. For those of you that are expecting me to take Lyoto Machida easily, I'm not taking Machida in this fight. I think he does have some solid striking. I think he can take Luke Rockhold into what they call the championship rounds, but I think Luke Rockhold gets the job done before the championship rounds. As a matter of fact, Luke Rockhold, I believe, can and will submit Lyoto Machida in the third round of this bout. I think it's going to be an interesting striking battle for the first two rounds. I think Luke Rockhold might barely win the first or second round, by somehow getting Machida to the ground. But I think Luke Rockhold takes Machida down in the third, wears him out for a little bit, gets Machida, he gets a hold of Machida's neck. And I will say this is probably the second, this is the second call that I have by a rear naked choke, but I think Luke Rockhold submits Machida by a rear naked choke. And it's not going to be like a technical submission. I think it's going to be, you know, just a straight up Leo Machida tap. So I think Rockhold's ground game is that good. I think people are sleeping on Rockhold that much. I do see Luke Rockhold, taking it to Machida in a very, very competitive bout. He's gonna dish it out. He's gonna take it from Lyoto, but ultimately he does submit Lyoto Machida. Round three submission, rear naked choke. Quote me on it. Anyways, ladies and gentlemen, that is our show for this week. And for all of your latest and your greatest in the MMA world, stop by your one-stop shop for all things MMA, TheMMACorner.com. For all of us here at the MMA Corner family, my name is Dale D'Souza. Fight fans, we will see you next week live on your only home for all things MMA on Blog Talk Radio, the MMA Corner Radio. And please, 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 I hope you enjoy UFC on Fox 15, Machida versus Rockhold.